top trends researcher, publisher, of course, of the Trends Journal, who joins us today. Welcome back, Gerald Salente.
Thanks for having me on. You know, there's a number of things going on, of course. Everyone's interested in where the markets are going and the geopolitical front. You're doing business with somebody like China, and they're making $365 billion in merchandise trade, and you're losing. You know, they're going to give up. They're going to make concessions. What Trump is wrong about is blaming the Chinese. You got to blame the American and the Europeans, the manufacturers, who took the jobs overseas so they could get it made by slave labor, give them all the technology that they never had, and bring the product here and mark up the price so they can make more money. That's all it was about. And if you're going to open up a place in China, you can open it up, but you don't become a minority owner in it. The state will own most of it. They have phony corporations that they have as fronts, but they're state-operated organizations. So it was really the manufacturers that sold us out. So we don't think there's going to be a trade war. What's going on also, one of the reasons why gold prices are down, and you know me, I don't have an agenda. I call it as I see it. Again, it's back to close combat. It's what it is, not what you want it to be. And as long as the dollar keeps rising, which, by the way, I did not think would happen, and I probably said that on your show back in January after I heard our Treasury Secretary Mnuchin say at Davos that the United States wanted a weak dollar. And the opposite has happened. So the dollar keeps getting stronger. The currencies around the world keep getting weaker. What's gold based in? Dollars. You got to buy it in dollars. So now your currencies are getting weaker. It's going to cost you more of those currencies to buy gold. So as long as the dollar stays strong, we're going to see gold prices under pressure. Having said that, again, I've been on your show for years. I've been saying for 5 years, gold has to break over $1,450 an ounce and solidify over that, and then it takes a Bitcoin bounce, meaning it would shoot up past 2,000. It hasn't done that. On the downside, I've also been saying for 4 years, the downside risk now is about $1,200, because that's what it cost to pull gold out of the ground when you average it out, some say, from Peru to South Africa. So going back to gold and tariffs and trade wars, the war that we're concerned about the most is the Iran war. And that's heating up between the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. If that blows loose, kiss the equity markets goodbye. Oil prices will spike to $100 a barrel, and gold will be the ultimate safe haven asset that most people will want to hold.
We're seeing some interesting articles start to spring up about $140 oil and maybe even $250 per barrel oil if some of these things you're talking about come to pass. Regarding your Chairman Mnuchin comments there on the weak dollar, don't feel bad. It happens to the best of us. We, too, have actually listened to and believed the central bankers' rhetoric in the past. It's a common affliction. We all get sucked in sometimes because they know just how to do it. That's their job, after all, right? Defending the currency. But, you know, I also wouldn't feel too bad about gold because it's one of those assets that protects your portfolio, gives you that peace of mind, sort of levels the betas in a portfolio.
Well, you nailed it. And when you look at real wage growth, it's behind inflation. So only the rich are getting much richer and everybody else is getting poorer. And you look at the OECD numbers and you see how wages have dropped across the developed nations since the panic in 2008. So everyone else is getting poorer. As a matter of fact, in the United States, you have Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett. The three people have more money than half the nation's population combined. The gap between the rich and the poor in the United States is the widest of any of the industrialized nations. The robber barons, according to the Tax Policy Center, a nonpartisan group, 82% of the tax cuts go to the 1%. Just want to just jump back into gold for 1 second. You know, there was a report that South Africa's 140-year-old gold industry, which was once the world's largest, is facing a major crisis. And the country's mineral council says that only 75% of gold mines are unprofitable and barely making money. And according to the CEO of Seabridge Gold, he said peak gold is the new reality in the gold business, with reserves now being mined much faster than they are being replaced. And then we heard from the president of the giant firm, Barrick Gold. He said, quote, falling grades and production levels, a lack of new discoveries, and extended project development timelines are bullish for the medium and long-term gold price outlook, end quote. So, goes back to what I was saying. Your downside risk of gold is very small. Your upside potential is limitless, because it's limited in how much is being produced, and the fiat currencies at some point are going to implode. And you're seeing it again. As, yes, gold is going down because U.S. interest rates are going up and gold is dollar-based. But all these other currencies around the world, particularly in emerging markets, are hitting new lows. So there is a lot of reasoning, as I see it, for gold to continue to be the safe haven asset for many, many years to come.
Now, you make a good point on the the cost issues associated with gold and silver production. We know Rudy Franck, that's the CEO of the company you mentioned, Seabridge Gold. He's been a friend of the show and guest here. Frankly, many of the miners are simply operating below the cost to keep the lights on, keep the doors open, keep conveyor belts running, and keep everyone on the payroll. But ultimately, as we lose them, unfortunately, because our industry, you can imagine, just under a lot of pressure, downward pressure, that actually is a self-fulfilling prophecy. As that cycle unwinds, clear through the chaff and less production, which increases demand, and then the lights come back on and more of the producers. So, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about the equities market. This is on everybody's radar screen. One of the best runs in the Dow Jones and S&P, even the Nasdaq, we've ever seen here in the past 8-9 years. Do you expect more of the same, or do you think that we've gotten overextended?
No, well, the markets are overvalued and overleveraged. We were the first magazine, 3 weeks after Trump got elected, to call the Trump rally. And then in our Trends Journal's top trends for 2018, we said that there would be a market correction and that the Trump rally would end. It's ended. The correction happened. It's out of correction territory now, but it happened before. No, it's over. And the only thing that's keeping it going, you're looking at stock buybacks and merger and acquisition activity level at record levels for this time of the year, these many months in, because of the tax cuts and tax breaks that Trump gave to the major corporations. So that's what's juicing the markets. And then there are only a handful of companies that are driving up the broad equity markets. So it's not an across-the-board rise. It's only a handful that are driving them up, particularly in the tech sector with the FANGs, you know, the Facebooks and Amazons and Apples and Netflix and Googles. So when you take those out and strip the big ones away, you're not seeing much growth at all. So they're over-leveraged, they're overvalued, and after this, we believe you're going to see pretty good corporate earnings around 20%, which is pretty strong. But again, a lot of that having to do with tax cuts. So we would say this is the beginning of the end. The end of the Trump rally is over. It may see a couple of little blips here and there, but the downside risk is much greater than any upside potential at this point.
This may be a bit outside the Globalnomic and Trend Research Institute's purview. You know, a trend that I think can't be ignored is artificial intelligence, okay, and robotics, and they all tie in together. And there are some interesting indications that we're seeing in the periphery. Okay, this, I'm not talking the mainstream. I'm not even talking Wired magazine. Outside the norm, on the fringes, stories, but unfortunately displacing a lot of key workers' positions due to a single IBM artificial intelligence unit saving the company millions of dollars per year, but unfortunately displacing a lot of key workers' positions. Do you see this theme catching our policymakers and officials, as well as the general populace, off guard in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, you mentioned public officials and bureaucrats, you know, politicians. They're always behind the curve. No, this is going to be a change, just as the Industrial Revolution changed what was before it. And then there's going to be a rebalance. What's really going on that people are missing, and we've been writing about this for quite some time, you have an overpopulation. If you go back to like 1900, there were about 1.5 billion people on the planet. We've added 6 billion people. You have overproduction. There are more products and services that we could ever utilize. You have overcapacity. You have online, and you also have open markets. It's coming from everywhere. So there's too much of everything, is the basic bottom line. So yes, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, all of these are going to be eating, and robotics, eating away at the labor force. And what does history show us? Who knows? I just read a little while ago, they found a skull that was 13 million years old. I mean, we have no idea what history is.
No, it's interesting you'd say that, because I just read an article today that in, I think it's Shenzhen, China, they just found a civilization 800,000 years old with tools predating Cro-Magnon in Central Europe, which is still a little bit older than the total population age, but the tools themselves now, the earliest proto-human tools, as of today, are now from China.
So what I'm saying is we have no clue. We don't know what's happened before. You know, has the planet been destroyed and come back in a different way? So again, this to me is just a cycle. And one cycle will end and a new one will begin. And whether it's artificial intelligence, robotics, virtual reality, whatever it might be, it will replace an old and a new one will be born, and it will move forward from there. But again, to me, the issue is, you know, how many people could the planet feed, how many can work, and how many could live comfortably? Because the numbers are real. Again, for 1.5 billion in around 1900, 1915, to here we are, you know, 100 years later, and they've added, what, 6 billion people. Those, to me, are the issues. I'm a second-degree close combat practitioner.
Okay, so any particular style you like?
No, you don't want a style. You don't want to get locked into a style.
It makes you vulnerable. It's survival.
Exactly. And I've been at this, you know, since 1984. So, yeah, and I've been through Tai Chi, Okinawan Te. It's a whole long story. And I ended up beating the Taekwondo champion of the Dominican Republic at back in early 90s, and my teacher of Okinawan Te, and the site to go to is attackproof.com. And I began back in the early 80s, I used to take Tai Chi, and then I met someone that taught me Okinawan Te, and I learned that for 7 years and became a black belt in that. And then on a trip down to the Dominican Republic, back in the early 90s, I ended up making friends with this fellow who was the head of security at the place where I was staying in Boca Chica. Not a place I would recommend to go. I was looking for a nice, quiet place to go to, and this wasn't it. Anyway, we became friendly. His name was Gennaro, and to make a very long story short, he was the Taekwondo champion in his category in the Dominican Republic, and I was going to watch him and Luis, his friend, work out the next day, and I went over to watch them work out over the tennis courts when I was staying in Boca Chica, and Gennaro said to me, he said, Luis couldn't make it. Something happened with his kid. So I said to him, listen, I said, let's you and I work out. You know, I'm a guy in my 40s at the time, and he's this young guy in his late 20s, trophies all over his room doing the, you know, we became very friendly. And anyway, we start working out, and I'm taking, again, Okinawan Tay at the time. I got this guy up against the fence before he could blink an eye. You know, we agreed, you know, before we started fighting, you know, yame, you stop when things are out of hand, you know, so. So I got him, and he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that I did it. And we became, you know, he said, what is this? And I told him, you know. And I was practicing very heavily for 7 years at that time. Anyway, I go back to New York where I was working out with Gary Abitelli, who was my teacher at the time. And after we worked out that day, we go out to dinner. It's like, you know, we used to work out for hours at a time. And we're in New York City on the west side, Greenwich Village. It's about 11 o'clock at night. I start telling him the story, what happened. And he said to me, Gerald, he said, you're going to have to forget everything that you've learned. I found somebody else, and I've been working out with him now for several months. His name is John Perkins, tackproof.com. And imagine having to forget everything that I've learned after all these years. Again, I had several years of Tai Chi, several years of Okinawan Tai. Just beat the guy that was the champion in his class in the Dominican Republic. You should have to forget everything you learned. And what close combat is, there is no form. There's no form in life. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how the attack is going to happen. As soon as you go into a form, you lost. And that's what close combat is. You attack the attacker, whether it's whatever it may be, however it may happen in any circumstance. So, and I used to have my own school. I used to teach in Woodstock for many years. And I used to teach a number of women. And I'm a small guy. I'm only like 5'7". Still have the same belt size I have when I was in college. And I'm the same age as Trump. They say to me, you know, I'm a small woman. What happens if a man attacks me? And I say to them, suppose you were fast enough to pick up a squirrel, grab that squirrel off the ground, and put that squirrel into your face. I said, what would that squirrel do to you? He said, rip my face apart. I say, you're bigger than a squirrel? What society has done to us, it's taught us not to be ourselves. It begins in school. You're not allowed to defend yourself. Something comes down, man, you're on your own. And that's what close combat is. It brings back the who you are to be who you are. And you ever see little dogs, you know, screaming at big dogs? You know, I've been in a number of fights. You don't even know the size of the person that you're fighting when you're in the fight. It just goes off. And that's what close combat is. It teaches you to become yourself. I told John Perkins this. He called me up to wish me a Happy New Year's this year. And I said to him, I said, you know, John, I said, other than my mother and father, may their souls rest in peace, you taught me more than anybody else in my life. You changed me more than anybody else in my life. Because, you know, I've been on your show, as you said, for 12 years. I say what I want to say. You have an issue with it? I'm very respectful. And, again, I grew up like that as a, you know, an Italian young guy in the Bronx, and then we social climbed Yonkers. But you learned how my mother, may her soul rest in peace. And my father, you know, and my father, one of his professions was building, I was a superintendent of construction, putting foundations for skyscrapers in New York City. And it's going back into the 50s and the 60s. You know, the unions are strong. And I go on the jobs on Saturday. People didn't work on Saturday. You go, you know, see what was going on the job. And all of a sudden, you get in an argument with somebody. I say, go on, get out of here, go on. And then, you know, I learned from my father, and he used to tell me, if you're going to get into a fight, it's going to go into the end. And that's the attitude you have, so you don't get into a fight. Because that's the last thing you want to do. And that's the other thing Perkins used to say. I don't care how good you think you are, you never know what you're up against. You know, somebody could pull a gun, whatever happens, boom, so you try to cool it out. But if it's going to come down, man, you make the other person know that, oh, this is going to the end. So even that attitude cools things out. What Tai Chi taught me was balance, centered balance and being open and breathing. So that's what got me prepared when I moved into the other martial arts. And it was a great foundation to build upon. And when you go to China, by the way, you know, you see people doing it, the older people doing it. You know, there's thousands of them doing it all day long. You know, not all day long, but wherever you go, you see people doing it. So it's something to keep you loose and in shape, and particularly as you get older. And, you know, as I said, you know, I'm 71 now. You know, I try to do everything I can to stay loose.
All right, Gerald Celente, the Trends Research Institute. Any contact information for the folks?
Sure, trendsjournal.com, trendsjournal.com. Money-back guarantee, history before it happens. You won't find it, the information we have in one source anywhere else. And thank you, Chris, and again, thank you for all that you do.